Welcome in the Scuttlebucks. Jeff Cameron alongside Tom Lang. Bucks fresh off a loss against the Rams, and now you will hear about it for the remainder of the week, and that is Bucks heading to Foxborough, take on the Patriots. Tom Brady making his way back to New England. But Tom, we should start with the loss. It was a game I kind of thought they would lose. That game mattered a lot more for the Rams, but there are some good and some bad things that happened in the game that I think are worth looking at and thinking about how this team moves forward. I don't know if you know this number, and it occurred to me while I was watching the game, and it's a big reason why the Bucks lost. The Bucks have a grand total of 3 sacks this year, Tom. At this point last year, they had 12. If you were going to do the silly thing like everybody likes to do, you'd say they're on pace for 16 sacks total. That is problematic because you've got a banged-up secondary that's not elite to begin with. So not getting home is causing an awful lot of problems for this secondary early in the year. It's something that I think will improve along with health. JPP didn't play in this game, obviously, but man, it's tough when you're going up against that group of receivers if you can't get pressure on the quarterback consistently and get him on the ground.
Yeah, I thought it's a combination of things that lead to this particular issue. And one of the factors is obviously that you've got a banged up secondary first. I'll get to the defensive line last. You've got a banged up secondary first. You face 3 quarterbacks that get the ball out really quickly, and especially Stafford's got an electric arm. And they put a lot of backup defenders in conflict in this game, whether it was Cockrell. They had a DeSean Jackson shot over the top before they actually hit one for the touchdown. That's an underthrow. Cockrell's in trail. He makes a good play, but that should be a touchdown if Stafford actually puts it where it needs to go. D. Delaney was clearly circled in the game plan or at the line of scrimmage where Stafford's looking around and says, oh, 30's over there? I'm going to go for 30 because I'm going to win that matchup. Even Carlton Davis, who doesn't look 100%, they did a really good job of creating a lot of opportunities to where they had to make a defender, make a decision. They know that we don't have the bodies in order to make those decisions, and we don't have the makeup speed in order to close the gaps. And then you add to that that they did a really good job of chipping on Shaq Barrett throughout the game. He also was in one-on-one, and he was stifled there. So you've got, again, 3 things. It's the fact that your secondary is lesser than, you're banged up front, and then you've got 3 good quarterbacks who get the ball out on time. I'll be interested to see if this trend continues this weekend, whether JPP plays or not. If it continues against Mac Jones, then you've got a real problem. But we'll see what happens on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't suspect that it will. I like the Bucs in the matchup. It's a bad matchup for the Patriots, but we'll get into that later on. I will say this, the 2 best passing offenses in the drop-back passing game up to this point, if you just look at sheer numbers, are the Rams and Kansas City. They're succeeding on 45% of their dropbacks in converting on first down. Nobody else is close in the league. So you just played the best dropback passing team in the league. Yep. And you didn't get home. So you're going to lose. And you have backup players, as you just eliminated, Tom, in the secondary. I don't know how, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and even Jefferson or Jackson. You brought up Jackson and his speed. I mean, that secondary is not covering those guys if you're not getting pressure. And the reason that ball was underthrown, thankfully, is one of the few times I can highlight it. Vita Vea pushes the center back into the quarterback. So, that saved us there. He would have waited another half second and been able to put a ball on him. But I'm not worried about it. I don't want to create this image of a desperate team. The Bucs are still one of the best 4 teams in football easily. I think if you look at power rankings and all the numbers, you'd see the Bucs are one of the best 3 teams in football right now. They're just not healthy, and they're not getting home. Now, Bruce Arians said this week when he was asked about the lack of pressure or the lack of sacks specifically, he said, well, don't confuse the two, and I'm paraphrasing. We're getting plenty of pressure. We're just not finishing the job. And he's talking about total hits. He brought up how many times they hit Dak Prescott, how many times they've hit each of these quarterbacks. But they're not getting him on the ground, so that is problematic. I think, obviously, when they get back healthy, they'll be all right. I do know this. Basically, Bowles had to play after a while. He got to where he just decided to play a little bit of zone, quite a bit of zone, because he understood that there wasn't much they could do. And folks that email us, they'll fans of any team that give up a bunch of points want to talk about pressure and bringing pressure Well, you and I both know just from watching him, and you can look at the numbers as well, nobody pressures the quarterback in terms of sending people at them more than Bowles does. I mean, the Bucs lead the league in blitz attempts, so it's not like they're not trying to get after the quarterback. They are trying to get after the quarterback. They send a lot of guys a lot of time.
Yeah, again, I don't want to overuse the term, but I think it's a confluence of a few things. Now, if we get healthy and JPP just looks old, like he flat looks old, and Tryon looks raw, and Barrett looks less than stellar, we'll know that in about a month, and you can assess it at that point. There's just a lot of things working against you right now. And when we did play zone, I mean, again, McVay in that offense and Stafford's understanding of how to play in an offense like that, they knew what defenders were going to be in conflict. They've got clear choices to make. Do they break on the inside breaking route or not? It's the Cooper Kupp touchdown. There's a choice made by Edwards there where he makes a choice to break in. And so Cooper Kupp's going to be open outside. And then Carlton Davis has to come up and try and make a tackle. It's too late. It was that kind of easy all day long. I thought the sequences, if you're going to talk about moments where I thought, damn it, guys, get off the freaking field, it's the third quarter. They've got two third and longs. There's about, I think it's 9 minutes to go in the third quarter. It's a third and 10 and a third and eight. Those were situations in which Stafford had tick, 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 about four of them before he let the ball go, and there still wasn't enough pressure. So, you know, it's a little bit of everything. But again, I think if you're looking long-term at the schedule, if there's a game that we've circled in that locker room where the intensity is going to be released, it's this upcoming one against the Patriots. Everybody wants to do it for Tom this weekend. And last week, if you're looking at who's circling the calendar, the Rams were, because they had more to prove. This is what we talked about last Friday, and they did so. They proved it. Now they have a tiebreaker in the standings for the bye or home field advantage and seeding. We'll see if the Bucs can run them down from here on out. But again, it's this is the way the NFL works. One game doesn't change. You're not magically crap. For one, we'll see if guys get healthy enough and where we go from here.
I do have some growing concern, and it was a concern that we talked about early on in his career, and it also reared its ugly head for a good stretch last season. If we're going to look at something that could be cause for concern moving forward, even if everybody gets right, I would say that in particular, you're just Devin White can't cover, and late in the year, he did. I don't know where that came from, but Tom, you remember the stretch in the postseason, he went from being a liability in coverage to a strength. Now it is rare that you see a guy go from a liability to a strength, an asset. Most of the time you can maybe cover it up and get to where it's not a, you know, maybe it's a wash, maybe it's even. But he actually, I mean, we remember the two interceptions in the postseason, how good he was, how dominant he was. He's always been a great blitzer, but he looks like he's regressed a little bit there too. Maybe he's a little out of control, maybe trying to do a little too much there because he's overrun several opportunities. I find that a little baffling and a little disconcerting right now. Devin White, who can be a menace as a linebacker and a dominant player, he certainly always is in the run game, has been through three games very much a liability in the past game yet again.
Yeah, I think part of it is you just look at the array of weapons that these teams have that we faced. I mean, again, there is going to be a portion of the schedule where you go, oh, they don't have a whole bunch of guys. This is just not that part of the schedule. Dallas voted for Barrett receiver. Obviously, they were in a war last week in that same building where they edged the Chargers. But then you saw what they did on Monday night when they beat the Eagles. I mean, good God, they've got so many options. Then Matt Ryan in week two plays out of his mind. That game is over. Like, it's on the brink of being over two or three times. And Matt Ryan makes a couple of amazing plays. And Kyle Pitts is really tough to defend. And then again, one big play, it's the DeSean Jackson play where he gets inside the 15-yard line. That's a rub. That ends up being Davis is in trail. He bumps into Devin White. Next thing you know, you have a receiver dragging in the open field, and DeSean can still run like the wind. And he's what, option number four or five for that team? Probably option five. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're seeing is you're playing a lot of loaded for bear offenses. And so it's going to make you look a little bit foolish, especially when you're coming off of, and I think it's fair to suggest, a bit of a Super Bowl hangover. The defense does look like they're a little bit behind, a little bit sluggish. I think the offense looks a little bit more fresh. But when we see it this weekend against the Patriots and then some of the upcoming games, I don't know that those offenses are going to be that loaded week in and week out.
Well, it's to your point. I saw on Twitter, I got to give credit where credit's due. We consume all things Buccaneers across all the landscapes. You have to if you're a fan and you're preparing, especially if you do a podcast. But I saw where John Ledyard noted on his Twitter feed, the week four, week five, week six, week seven, week eight. Here are the quarterbacks the Bucs face moving forward after seeing a group of really good ones. Mac Jones, Jacoby Brissett, Jalen Hurts, Andy Dalton slash Justin Fields, Jameis Winston, bye week, Taylor Heineke or Fitzmagic, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan. Man, they can begin to feast starting
right
now.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. And again, just think of those. I'll list the teams. You just listed the quarterbacks. And think about the skill position players. If you're a fantasy player out there or DFS, you certainly know the teams you want to hit and you don't want to hit. Patriots, Dolphins, Eagles, Bears, Saints, Washington, Giants. I mean, oh my God. They are not loaded like the Rams are. They're not loaded like that Cowboys. And you know what? Dallas actually looks a little bit better right now. We thought maybe the injury at edge rusher. But you go out west and you beat a Chargers team that just went into Arrowhead and took care of the Chiefs. And both of those teams thought that game was important. And then you lay the wood to Philly. That game wasn't even as close as the score said. Yeah, man, I think what you were finding here, and Bill Belichick's going to throw the kitchen sink at Tom Brady. I think he's going to go off a schedule this week. We can talk about that on Friday. Brady had the interview with Jeff Darlington that's going to be released on Sunday on ESPN where he says, I know exactly what they're going to do. I don't think you do, Tom. This is the kind of thing Belichick does where he goes against tendencies. But at any rate, you get out of that kitchen sink game, and yeah, this is a very, very gettable part of the schedule. And even when you get into December, the first game of December is Atlanta. The Bills, that game's going to be a war in week, what is that, week 14? Mm-hmm. But right, Saints, Panthers, Jets, Panthers. I mean, you could argue that the stretch we're facing right now that we just
got. Is the toughest by far, yeah.
Is the hardest three-week schedule for this defense the whole season.
Sure. No, I think that's accurate. I do, Tom. I do think there's reason for, I would say, extreme optimism over the next 7 or 8 weeks. I mean, the Bucs could very well, in the next eight games, go 7-1, 6-2, 6-1. And you know, I think that's not crazy. And obviously, if you are to do that, all of a sudden, we're having a very different conversation at 8-2 or 9-2, and you know, nobody's panicking at that point. I think too, when you watch Super Bowl teams, a lot of times it is hard early on. You played the extra games, you climbed to the top of the mountain, you won the championship. It's human nature to have a bit of a letdown. It does help when you have a red ass like Tom Brady, who I don't think, I mean, he's very Nick Saban-esque, right? It's about the next championship. It's always about the next championship. Hence the reason he has seven of them and he's played for a lot more. It's good to have that guy. You need a guy who's abnormally obsessed with the next thing, because otherwise most normal people tend to have a moment to exhale after reaching the summit. Yep. So I do suspect that there's a little of that going on, but they also have been banged up, and it's something to note there. They've been very banged up. I think it was interesting to point this out, and this is how good he is. If you flip to the other side of the ball, to me, it was shocking to see Gronk play as poorly as he did in this game. And that tells me just how damn good he's been for so long, because outside of the beginning of last year where it looked like he was running in quicksand and I called it out and said, I'm really concerned that this guy is done, which he made me look like a fool and said, no, not only am I not done, I'm going to come back just as good as I was 4 years ago. And he has. He's running as fast as he has in a long, long time, Tom. He's at all the spots. He ran away from people in this game. There were moments where he did everything he needed to except for catch the ball. Yep. So he got blown up on a play by Aaron Donald. There had to have been a miscommunication there. There's no way on earth you would ever have as good a blocker as he is, Gronkowski blocking one-on-one with Aaron Donald. That can never happen. That's asinine. I don't know what happened with the pre-snap there, but he got crushed, as you would expect, because nobody's blocking Aaron Donald one-on-one, most especially not a tight end. But anyhow, Gronkowski had a terrible game. Yeah. I mean, that is an imminently catchable ball early in the game. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect throw from Tom, who realizes he's got to get rid of it sooner than he wants to. And he drops that. He drops another one. He also gets called for an offensive penalty, which I don't think was. I think it's a questionable call, but he still got called for it. He also ran a wrong route. Yeah. He had a couple of moments in this game. That won't – I guess I'm saying all this to say this. That won't happen very often. He's that good. That's just – it just stands out when he plays poorly.
Yeah, he also got stuck. When's the last time you see him stay on the ground after getting lit up?
And that's he got crushed, yeah. You know,
there was concern that he would be available for this week. It sounds like the early week prognosis through the NFL insiders say he'll be he'll be good to go. Yeah, but I thought this game, if you're talking about setting the pace for this game and who's chasing whom, a couple of key drops. It was the Jamel Dean drop on the deflected pass, and then it was the Gronk drop early on in the first quarter, where maybe we're off to a 7-0 or 10-0 start, and what you know the Rams can call and the urgency with which they play, maybe the game pressure changes everything. Those are the plays we did make last year on the way to the Super Bowl, and it's you know some of the things that just haven't happened, and they didn't happen, obviously, on Sunday. I think also the thing to remember about this team, and I'm not trying to take a casual approach, like everything's going to be fine. You have to stay and monitor what's going on because sometimes trends are real and teams have a bad hangover season as a whole. But this team learned one thing last year about turning it on at the right time. We talked about the bye week and then Brady seemed to get the offense, but there was also that second half comeback against Atlanta and then they were off to the races. And they scored 30 points in every game until this past weekend. They also know that it's about time releasing. You don't want to go balls to the wall for a podcast expression. You don't want to do that right out the gate in the season. So I think part of it is also managing your minutes and your snaps. You saw it with a snap count for Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea this weekend. Offensively, some of the things I liked, I'm glad to hear that Gio Bernard is going to be day-to-day because that hit at the end on the last touchdown looked pretty nasty.
MCL sprain, yeah.
I was glad to see that he got more involved in the offense in the passing game. Yeah, sometimes it got lit up, and sometimes it was all too predictable, and early on we were off the field because it was telegraphed that it was going his way. But it's good to see that wrinkle added to the offense. Tyler Johnson had a really nice game, a couple of big catches, one where he had to adjust looking over one shoulder and switching to the other. It's good, especially since Scotty Miller is down with an injury. You got to fortify all of your depth, and I thought a couple of depth pieces this weekend looked good. So if you're trying to take the 10,000-foot view, some of the wrinkles that this offense is going to allow later in the season and the postseason push, they're starting to get developed on the field with real reps. That was good to see.
Scotty Miller out with turf toe, which is a really painful injury and can be lingering. I don't want to prognosticate on his future this season, but it's a devastating injury for a skill position player to have. So you're going to get to see some other guys quite frequently, as you just noted. You mentioned Giovanni Bernard. Thank goodness he's okay. Were you as surprised by the 33 snaps that he played in? By the way, that's more than Leonard Fournette had, and it's a hell of a lot more than Ronald Jones, who's in the doghouse, had.
Yeah. Rojo had a really bad game a couple weeks ago. He tried to get cut, you know, against the Falcons, I thought. The way he played, because it was like three or four different types of detail that there were mistakes on.
And he missed a blitz pickup in this game, right, Tom, and they yanked his ass. I'm telling you, that guy's not long for this team if he keeps this up.
Correct. The one thing that, you know, I didn't like what I saw out of Gio Bernard was he got blown up in a blitz protect and still gave up the sack anyway. He filled the correct gap, but you got to finish the play and run with a little bit of vigor. I'm sure that's what they're saying in the film. Go up and hit a guy. Don't catch him. And but yeah, I thought when the reports came out that Leonard was going to start, I thought, okay, that makes sense. The way that this thing is trending, Leonard's got the hot hand right now, and Rojo is making mistakes. So we'll see a lot of seven. But, you know, I think this coaching staff, the offensive staff, and the defensive staff are all looking at snap count and the long game. I think what they're looking at is, listen, there are going to be some ups and downs. You've got COVID protocols that are going to come into play for every team this season, and we're going to be no exception. We already haven't been an exception to that rule. You now have to play the 17th game, and it's a long and grueling postseason. You've got a lot of veterans who you know exactly what they can do, what they're going to bring to the table because of the unmatched continuity in the salary cap era for this team. So if somebody needs to take a week off, quote unquote, where maybe they get 30% of the snaps reduced from what they usually do, that's just going to happen. So I think the long answer to your question is no, I wasn't surprised, because you're going to see a lot of bodies rotate and depth being built over the course of the season. They don't care about division titles. They're building to make themselves the best version and the healthiest version of themselves come January.
I want to go circle back here in just a second, but I want to thank our friends at Bill Curry Ford. Do you have your eye on a new Ford truck? Do you want out of your lease? What about a major repair? Reach out directly to Bill Curry Ford General Manager Sean Sullivan. He will help you personally. Find his email at BillCurryFord.com or go to Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway in Tampa. They're huge Bucks fans of Bill Curry Ford, and serving the community is what they're all about. So many Bucks players and coaches are customers, including Vita Vea, by the way, Ali Marpet, and others. Bill Curry Ford has a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. And remember, GM Sean Sullivan will assist you personally. Ask for the Joe Bucks fan discount, BillCurdyFord.com. Richard Sherman coming to Tampa. Is it going to be? Well, he's visiting Tampa Bay, and he's not just visiting Tampa Bay. He's visiting other franchises as well. And you might cringe or recoil because of some of the stuff that happened off the field where he crashed his SUV in a construction zone and kicked a family member's door. You know, that's an interesting story in that the more you look at it, he was never charged. Police have come out and said he did not physically assault anybody the way that it was first read. He did plead guilty, not guilty to all charges, but did go into rehab. Sounds like, frankly, he just got blitzed and was in a bad place mentally and was drinking himself into a stupor. Wish him well. I don't know the rest of the particulars there, but because he didn't assault anybody and because he was incredibly good in 2019, I'm willing to take a good look here at Richard Sherman. 2020, he had the calf strain, so you really can't do anything with that. But 2019, he was one of the best cover corners in football. Would you want Richard Sherman?
Well, are we going to play more zone? You know, that's the question, because he's obviously somebody who got famous and rich and was exceptional at freestyle that, you know, Pete Carroll had out in Seattle. And we saw some more zone looks this weekend. I don't know that you can, like, in the Todd Bowles system, we like to bring a lot of pressures and leave guys on islands. I don't know that he can handle that. But then again, I don't know what other options we have. And if you're looking at a mini arms race, if you want to throw up a yellow alert, I think it's too soon. But Carolina seems to be going for it. They're signaling that when they're going to get C.J. Henderson after they lost one of their owners to long-term injured reserve. You know, you may want to look at it if the readout on what Carlton Davis is going to be, is it a lingering issue all season long? Jordan Whitehead's availability, does that shuffle bodies around such that you need to make a move? I don't know. It'll be an interesting fit if they do make the signing, but you're right. I'm looking at his Pro Football Focus grades, and I don't treat it as gospel, but his coverage grade was a 90 in 2019.
Dude, he was one of the highest rated corners in the entire league. Yeah. He was unbelievable. I remember being in shock, Tom, when we talked about him like midway through that year. It's like, by the way, it's like he's 21. I mean, he was incredible. Now, I don't know, you know, listen, it's up to the Bucks to do their due diligence. You're talking about a guy again who had an injury in 2020. And so I don't know how far he slipped. He's older. Clearly, he went through a stretch where he was having some off-the-field problems. So you got to find out where he's at mentally, and you got to find out, is he ready to play physically?
Yeah.
If he's ready to play physically and he's in shape, yeah, man, I'm going to go ahead and sign Richard Sherman. I would do that. I think, actually, that's quite an upgrade. Sean Murphy Bunting is still out. You need help in that secondary right now.
Yep.
I'm signing him.
Yeah, that's one name I didn't mention when I brought up what's going on at safety with Whitehead. But, yeah, I mean, he's 33. He's had a lot of time to rest for one reason or another. I think even if he's not game ready this week or next week,
you might
sign him. You take him off the board for somebody else who's going to be a contender because, again, you got to think about this in binary terms. Super Bowl or bust. That's what this season is about. And if you do the background checks and you find that there aren't any, you know, real red flags, he's gotten things together, and you might as well take a stab at it. And if he's ready to go in a month, so be it. Because, okay, now you've got options with Davis, Murphy Bunting, Richard Sherman, among others. And, again, this is a long damn season, and you just played a month of extra football at the highest level. There is going to be attrition. So the more depth you have, and if you can get him under the cap, then, yeah, it might be worth doing.
Well, he's a dog too, man. And, you know, you love guys like this, guys that have this weird switch in their brain, and it permeates the locker room. You've got that on offense with Tom Brady and others, I might add. I mean, there are a lot of other guys on that offense that are that way too. Tristan Wirfs in year one kind of proved he was that way, obsessed with domination. There are other guys too that are like that. So you get Gronk is that way. Man, listen, I'm never against signing a guy who can process things quickly, is really, really smart pre-snap, knows what an offense is trying to do to him. You know, you saw for years and years and years, Rondé Barber had a unique skill set. It wasn't that of an elite corner, but he made up for that in other ways. I think Sherman's made a career out of making up for whatever deficiencies he has in terms of speed by understanding what's coming. And so to me, yeah, I would do it. Again, it seems to me, we don't know for sure. I'd have to go back through, but those were all misdemeanor charges. None of them were for assault like we originally thought. So once that's off the table and he didn't actually physically harm anybody, listen, I don't want to get into the morality of all the rest of that. I just know that in terms of the Bucks protecting themselves, if you find that out and you find out he's cleaned up his life and he's okay and he's in a good place mentally and right. He just needs to work. I'm signing him for sure.
Well, and you also get him in a position where there's plenty of incentive for him to perform so he can go make more money. You love those situations. Yeah. And he would fit mentality-wise with this defense because, remember, the thing we loved about this defense, they kind of went to bed in the middle of last season, but the first couple of weeks, they came down and hit you. And then in the playoffs, everything about what we were reckless with our bodies.
Yeah.
Secondary. And this is somebody who will inspire that type of toughness and only echo that type of toughness. He could be annoying at times, but you fall in line when you get to this place. I mean, that's what's so cool about being a Buck fan right now. Is it seems like there is a line of delineation of how things are done. Nobody really gets out of line because they'll get checked right away. And you can't go out of line when Tom Brady is your quarterback, too. You got to fall behind him. So, yeah, a lot of these moves that might be higher risk for other franchises were kind of like the Patriots were a few years ago in that. I'm not talking about total championships or dynasty. It's just you can't come in and step out and you know, show your ass because if you do, you're gone or you're on the bench. It's that simple.
By the way, the reason we bring all this stuff up on the defense is that is the area of greatest concern. Obviously, Tom and I have stressed the competition they've faced. If you look at the teams so far through 3 weeks, if you're just looking at power rating offenses, the Rams are averaging nearly 32 points a game. And then I'm just going to give you the teams that are at the top of the list. The Bucks are averaging nearly 35 points a game. The Cardinals are averaging nearly 35 points a game. And that's it. That's all. Like, the next closest team is the Cowboys averaging 30. I think the Bucs offense is in a range where they're going to stay for most of the year. I think they're going to continue to be probably the most prolific offense or one of the three most prolific offenses in the league throughout the remainder of the season. You would of course look at the Chiefs. They're at 30 points a game as well. They've started to struggle a little bit in a couple of occasions, especially in areas that you have not seen. Late in games, throwing red zone interceptions. That's kind of strange to watch, but we'll see. But you know, the Bucs are going to be one of the most prolific offenses at the point throughout the course of the season. So what you've got to mend is this defense.
Well, and the thing that you're looking at, too, as a Buck fan, you get to standings watch early in the season because barring, you know, a rash of injuries, like insane amounts of long-term injured reserve type injuries, we're going to be in this conversation for home field advantage throughout the playoffs, a home playoff game, those types of things. Well, Arizona and the Rams are about to face off. That's a really good matchup, especially when you're looking at the offensive ratings that you spoke of. Okay, if the Cardinals do it to the Rams defense, now you have to honor that they might actually be legitimate, because that's the other thing. We talk about some of the elements we liked on offensively speaking from Sunday, but the Rams defense is good. The Rams, we've had our way with that in recent matchups, but that's still a really good defense that's trying to peak again and cash in on this window closing. The Stafford signing tells you it's this year and next year, and that's probably about it. If the Cardinals do it again to that defense, then you've got to look at them as another potential outside contender, because Green Bay looks like they've recovered. They're going to be okay in the long haul, especially record-wise in that division. They should be able to rack up quite a few wins. Outside of that, maybe the Minnesota offense week to week, but their defense isn't good enough to be a contender. So again, you're just looking at empire building. Who are the threats? Arizona has at least gotten our attention. We'll see if they're legitimate into this weekend. And that's where it gets so fun, because there are two conversations going on at the same time. The two conversations used to be, what do we do on Sunday? And what pick are we going to get in the top 10 of the draft? what seed are we going to have in January?
Yeah, it's a weird thing. By the way, you hit on a hell of a note as we round up the Scuttlebucks here. Don't forget, got another one for you coming up this Friday. And this is fun. It's the late games, guys, of which the Bucks, of course, are a big part. The 8:20 kickoff on Sunday night. But go back to Tom noting Cardinals, Rams, 4:05, Steelers, Packers. Steelers are in trouble, by the way. If you're a Steelers fan, I hate it for you, because Ben Roethlisberger is shot in the same way that we saw a certain shrimp of a quarterback shot in New Orleans for the last 2 years. Ravens, Broncos, good game there. Sneaky good game. Bucks, Patriots, as I said, then the Monday night game is Raiders, Chargers, which is fun too. So everything happens late Sunday into Monday for the better portions of this schedule. Don't forget, again, we'll circle back. You got one more time?
Yeah, I was going to say, so you're telling me that a 10 a.m. tee time on Sunday is not a bad idea.
If not a bad idea.
Come back in towards halftime of the 1 o'clock window. It's not the end of the world. Usually you got to get that tee time before 8 a.m.
Now, I'm with you, and I might attend that 10 a.m. tee time with you if you'd like to go do it. I think the weather is going to be nice for it. For Tom Lang, I'm Jeff Cameron. Thanks for listening to the Scuttle Bucks. We'll be back with you again on Friday. A little 15-minute preview of that New England game. We look forward to it. Thanks for listening, everybody.